Well, what do you think my subject matter is going to be about today?
Rashid.
I said, oh, you talked about that last week. That's true, I did. And the reason why it's a very important word, because it tells us something that we need to take a little closer look at. We're going to enter in the New Testament a little bit today, so you can kind of see a parallel or a meaning behind it. Before we get there, have a quick rundown. Man, it says Bereshit, which was a bet. What is bet is? What is bet? The house. Okay. Basically, the word, the meaning translated in English is within. Not just within, but with inside of. So it's something inside that house. And what's inside that house is a beginning or a Rashit. All right. We know that has to do with the word head. Head does not mean the boss. Head does not mean the ruler. Head just means that's where it begins. All right? Something begins or starts from that point. Apostle Paul addresses that subject matter when he stated that that man was made first, then the woman. He wasn't saying the man is the head because he's the boss. It started with him first. That's how God worked. God starts from someplace. So we're going to look at the starting point here today. And try to keep this in mind, because in order to understand the entire book of Genesis, we won't go through the entire book of Genesis in detail, just the first, probably more in the first chapter than anything else, and we'll run along at a faster pace in the remaining chapters. But it has to do with motion. Something is taking action. Something is taking place first. It's the beginning of something. For a quick relapse, remember we talked about Reuben and had to do with the firstborn. Remember, the firstborn does what? What's a representation of the firstborn?
Strength.
Strength, okay.
The beginning
of what?
Strength.
Okay. It's the start of something. Okay, it's the beginning of something. Let's get more specific. While we turn there, it's in Genesis, the 49th chapter. And verse 3. There's several things in there that the firstborn represents, if I can use that terminology. Verse 3. All right, I'm going to read it from a couple of different translations. Reuben, my firstborn, thou, my power, and beginning of my strength, the abundance of exaltation, and the abundance of strength. That's one of the translations have it. Does anybody else have another translation of that particular verse?
Yeah. So, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power.
Okay. Any other translations?
Yeah.
Okay.
Reuben, you are my firstborn, my strength, the first fruits of my manhood, the superior in vigor and power.
Okay.
I've got a different one. Reuben, my firstborn, you are my strength and first yield of my manhood, prevailing in rank and prevailing in might.
Okay. Do you have another one?
Mine's almost the same.
Almost same as hers.
Reuben, you are my firstborn. My might and first fruit of my vigor, exceeding in rank and exceeding in honor.
Okay. Those are big, powerful words, aren't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Man, we're talking not about, don't think about the man, Reuben. Think about the firstborn. That's the subject matter here today in this particular statement being made. Reuben, thou, my firstborn, my might, meaning you read already something, is my vigor, my firmness, my vitality. All right, different ways which you can bring this about. Now think of the Messiah being the first from the dead. Okay, firstborn or first of the dead. And in a sense, we get into the New Testament, but he's the beginning of the resurrection of the dead. He's the first one that comes on the line. And he's called in by Paul as the firstborn of the dead. So get a picture here of what's going on. And so in a sense, you're seeing this is what God is saying about the firstborn. It's a representation of the firstborn, kind of representation of what Jesus or Yahshua is now since he's alive. All right? And he says now, and the beginning of my strength, or my effort, my ability, my power, the excellency of my overwhelming of my dignity, the rising up, dignity is meaning the rising up, you've raised up my dignity, you raised up my honor, you raised up my glory, in a sense. That's what the message of the firstborn is. But this really says the beginning. This is the very first thing. Remember I said last week? The beginning is one thing, and it's going to get bigger at the end. Right? And this is where the kingdom of God comes in. This is where Bereshit, in the house, something began. And inside that house, it's going to get bigger and bigger. What did Jesus say? I'm going to go and build what? Mansions for you. A place for you to live. A place for you to dwell. So he's going to do an awful lot of work. All right? So we kind of see this big explosion taking place. We can call it an explosion. It's not technically an explosion. That's an evolutionary concept. There is a Hebrew word, though, that explains this. We will not get into it today. We'll get into it tomorrow, or next week, rather, of what I mean by that expansion. Just a quick rundown. I do want to go back to one place. I'm just going to go there. But you remember where I will crush your head, but you'll crush my foot, right? Kind of an interesting how this works with God. We think sometimes of military might or strength because that's how we associate our world with, right? It's the flesh, and then we see what's going on. But I want to put you in a different way and look at it differently. You don't have to turn there. In Genesis 10:10, you remember, it's the beginning of the kingdoms. First time there was ever kingdoms existed was in Genesis 10:10. What happened? What was the name of those kingdoms? Well, one was Baal. Babel and Iraq, Akkad, and Kalhid in the land of Shinar. This is the very first time that kingdoms began to be established. Now, it began. That's the beginning. How did God crush the beginning? How did he crush the head? Changed the language. And the kingdom just fell apart. They just crushed to nothing. Just how God can crush with his word alone and by itself in a very interesting method of just, I'll just change the language and then that's the end of the kingdoms. It's gone. All right, so it's kind of interesting how you look at this. We call about the beginning and God will begin. When he crushes the head of the serpent, he's going to crush the beginning of the serpent. All right. What is the serpent? Where did the serpent begin? What was the beginning of the serpent?
The deception of Eve and Adam.
Liar. He's a liar. He began the lies. He's the father of lies, right? And therefore, from him, God, the eternal, is going to crush his head. He's going to crush the very beginning of lies. And all liars will be eliminated. Once that is gone, there's nothing left. All right. The head must remain in order for the entire body to exist, right? You cannot have a river, right, if you don't have a head. Once the head is dried up, the river's gone, right? I just use a parallel here to understand what you mean by Bereshit, or Rashi, in a sense. All right. Now, in Isaiah 46, I didn't want to read the whole thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to read the only first sentence. Yes.
Is that then why then you have the adversary confined for 1,000 years? Because if you cut off that supply, then...
Cut off that supply. Once that supply is cut off, so truth will be dominant.
So the lies dry up.
Lies dry up. Yes.
I have a question. You were talking about...
That's a parallel on that. Okay, yes.
Kingdoms, the crushing of the kingdoms. So Jesus came to proclaim that the kingdom is now. So is it also to do with kingdoms as well?
Oh, yes, but one kingdom. Only one kingdom.
One kingdom, God's
right,
kingdom.
Right, yes.
Okay.
That comes a little later.
Heaven. Okay.
Right, that comes much later.
See where you're headed.
Yeah, okay. And the kingdom of heaven is going to be so large, so massive, so huge, there'll be none other. Of course, people would want it that way, see? The joy of that kingdom is people want to live there.
Yeah.
their ruler is honorable, respectful, doesn't lie. He tells the truth. He is the truth. I mean, what else is it you want, you know? We'd love to have a leadership in our country that way, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
But in one way, we may be terrified of it, too, because he would probably tell us to do something we wouldn't want to do, all right? So, you know, you got to keep that part in mind. When the Messiah comes to set up, he's going to set up. He's going to institute truth. Now, once truth is instituted, lies perish. All right? Deception perish. Sin perishes. Death. We won't go in there today. The Apostle Paul talked about the last one to perish is going to be death itself. All right? Now, I'm only going to read the first section of Isaiah 64, verse 10. Magid, Mereshit, Hakarit. What all that means literally in English is making known from the beginning, making known from Rashid, Genesis 1:1, making known from the beginning the last, what's going to happen at the end. So as we go through Genesis chapter 1, we're going to see the beginning and we're going to see the end at the same time. Remember we talked about a parallel that if you were watching a parade, if you're on the ground, it comes around the corner. But you never see the end of the parade, do you? But if you walk up in a 10-story building on the roof, you'd see the beginning of it and you'd see the end of it all at the same time, right? In a sense, that's what the revelation of Genesis is all about. Yes?
46:10 or 64?
46, verse 10. I don't know how it says in your translation. Why don't you read your translation, 46:10?
It says, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times, things that are not yet.
Okay, this one, the first part of it. Now, see what happens to most of your translations, declaring the end from the beginning. Some people have a thinking that, well, he knows the end because why? Well, he can predict the future. That's not what it says in Hebrew. He's going to begin it. And he is going to end it. Regardless what happens in between. I'll give you some examples. We already did with some examples. Won't go in detail. But you remember the time that Abraham was pulled out and left the land? And it said it was 490 years later that the Israelites were at Mount Sinai? You know that period of time was a whole lot longer. A whole lot longer than 490. But if you count the years that God himself acted and did things precisely, you'll come up with exactly 490 years. The same period from the time when they built, when Solomon completed both the temple and the kingdom, that is the castle, is exactly 490 years from the time of Mount Sinai to that point. Wait a minute, that's 900 years. Oh, yeah, that's 900 years. Remove all actions of men and see the actions of God. What do you got? 490 years. So we're looking at God's time. So he says, I will declare to you what is going to happen at the end because I am bringing this about regardless what man does. Regardless how much man interferes, regardless how much man tries to alter my plans, it won't work. Because in the beginning, I'm going to tell you what's happening. In the beginning, I'm going to tell you where you're going. In the beginning, I'm going to tell you why. All right? I just wanted to keep that part in mind that we keep understanding about the beginning. It's very interesting, just a note here. You remember Jacob and the ladder? Where was the head of the ladder? It was in heaven. And the Greek Hebrew has very interesting, the ladder came down. So it began there and went down to the earth. It wasn't at the current earth and went up to heaven. It was from heaven coming down. So we know where the beginning is at, right? Beginning is always from above.
Because doesn't it say the angels were descending
and ascending?
Huh.
It's kind of interesting where, just an idea, you know. You know, it's not really that important, but I thought you might like that little tidbit of information. How the word of Hebrew has this wonderful word called head. And basically, Roshit is what we're after. Now I'm going to move up quickly. Leviticus, chapter 23. We are in the process, my wife is in the process of making a new banner. Now, when she first had this banner out, what she wanted to say on it, I looked at it and I says, no, that's not what it says. She wanted to talk about the wave sheaf offering. And she called it the first fruit. That's not what it says here. Doesn't say first fruit. It says first fruit later on in the 17th verse. But this verse, verse 10. Now you heard about counting of the Omer? Right, you heard that, right? There has to be a beginning of the count. Right? It's not done arbitrarily. Speak unto, verse 10, unto the children of Israel, and thou hast said unto them, when ye come into the land which I give you, you shall have reaped the harvest and brought about the sheaf, the Rashit of your harvest. Rashit Karadit. Karazir. Now, we begin with something. So there's a beginning of something. And it ends when? It ends at Feast of Weeks. So the beginning of the count really is not a count of an Omer about something other than you count number one, which is really the beginning of the count. And who's the beginning of the count? Yahshua is the beginning of it. This is why the wave sheaf offering is considered, if not the first, sometimes rather the first of the first fruits, that works too, but it's the better sheaf of the first fruit. It's the beginning of the first fruit. So we have here, on this particular point in time, that we have a very interesting phrase, that it is the beginning. And so when we have a new banner, it's not going to say first fruit. It's going to say Rashi Karazir. You use that word. Karazir means harvest. Karazir is just the harvest. Rashi, we know what it means, right? So it's the first of the Omer, we would call it, best way you can. And only that one, and that one only is waived. Nobody else. Number two is not waived, number three is not waived, number four is not waived, all the way until we finish the end of the harvest. Right? Then at the end of the harvest, you'd have something else raised up. What do you have raised up at the end of the harvest? Two loaves of bread. All right. Two loaves of bread. Just want you to know that that's what's coming down. All right. With that in mind, I want you to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Now, remember in Greek, there wasn't any punctuation marks. There wasn't any commas. There wasn't any periods like it was in Hebrew. I mentioned this last time, but I think it's got to this point. We recognize this first. Or to put this, we recognize the Rashit. We all recognize that the Rashit is whom? Well, parallel that, the Rashit is the Messiah. I'll get there and show you. Greek has a hard time trying to explain. Any language, by the way, has a hard time explaining when they translate it from one language to the other language, what the flavor of the real word it really is. It's really hard to do that. You do a real good job most times, but sometimes you try to pick the best one, That's why reason why some of you have all different kinds of translations, different kinds of words, of different meanings, of different words, because they try to pick it out. The translators think, oh, let's use that word, not that word, instead. That's why you have this kind of, like, what you may say, confusion. But, when Greek has four or five specific meanings, no matter how important they are or unimportant they are, one of those words must be in harmony with the Hebrew. If it's not in harmony with the Hebrew, then it's in harmony with man. Right? You must find those Greek words that's closest to the harmony of what is in Hebrew. And that's what's important. That's the reason why I'm going to bring this out today, because we're going to find out something very interesting, I hope. Chapter 15, verse starting verse 20. Now, is Jesus risen from the dead, become the first fruits, or I'm going to call it, in clarification, because they don't have a Hebrew word, he is the Bereshit from the dead, or the Bereshit of the harvest. Do you understand what I'm saying? There is where we have an explanation. Apostle Paul was a Jew, of course, right? He would have known what Jewish words were, and so we had to come into the Greek. What was the best word he could use? He could only use first fruit. Because that's the only Greek word that works. But see, also in Greek, first fruit could be in the very beginning as well. So they have the same word, could have several meanings. But in Hebrew, it's very clear. Rashit is Rashit.
What book was this in?
This is in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 20. Now listen very carefully. I want to talk about this Rashit. I'm reading my port Rashit because we'll get to the conclusion today. Hopefully, of this word. All right? For since man, since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. Okay, what does that mean? For as in Adam, the beginning of death, the rushing of death, it began with Adam, right? So the beginning of it with death. And that's what happens. Now another one from man has to come up to have the beginning of, or the first of, beginning of life. The Rashid of life. So when we think about the timing of the wave sheaf offering, okay, the Rashid, Karazir, we're talking about the Messiah. All right? We won't go into the timing on that right now. Because that's not an issue right now to be discussed. For every man in his own order. Listen to the order. Now I'm going to put some commas there so you understand what I'm talking about. Christ, comma, and I put notes here, beginning of the resurrection or the beginning of life. And the first fruits. Oh, that's something different. Afterwards, they direct Christ's coming. Now there's three different things there. Did you notice? Christ is not the first fruit. Christ is the beginning. He's the Rashid. Then comes the first fruit. First fruit is mentioned in what? In what season? Mentioned in what?
Shavuot.
That's where the first fruit comes in. Okay? And then there comes the last of it, which are those who are still alive. Do you notice that? Those who are still alive are, guess what? They're not the beginning. They're not the in-between. They're the end. Now listen, the beginning is smaller. By the time the end comes, it's huge. What does it say in Revelations? The innumerable multitude. You can't count them. Right? A huge volume. So in the very beginning, it tells you what the end's all about, right? And that word alone will tell you. We all know we're waiting for, we're longing for this time when the Messiah will come. And we also are all terrified because the mere fact it is a frightening thing because even dead is going to be gloom and doom and darkness. By the way, God said he created darkness. I'm not going to get into that today, but we'll get into that sometime later. John, 11th chapter. John, 11th chapter, verse 25 and 26. So we have a little banner over here, and it says, I am the resurrection and the life. Remember that? John 11, 25 and 26. I am the resurrection, or I am the beginning and the life of the beginning. I am the resurrection and life. I am the first one to arise or the first one to have life. I am it. There's no one else. We all know we have to come to Him, right? Now we have to be careful how we come to Him. Very fascinating what God says. Before we go there, I want to bring out one more interesting point, and just keep yourself there. Don't go into the Torah yet. Don't go back to the Torah yet. But it's a very interesting thing, and we read in Deuteronomy 26, verse 10. You can write that down in your notes. Now behold, I have brought forth the first fruits of the land. You know what that says in Hebrew? I brought forth the beginning. He didn't bring forth a tithe. He brought forth the beginning of the harvest. When are you supposed to bring forth the beginning of the harvest? During days of unleavened bread. That's when you bring it forth, right? Did you catch that? Of the ground which you have given me, O Lord, and thou shalt sit before the Lord thy God and worship Him all thy God. We will start worshiping God at that point. First thing God wants is the beginning. The first things He wants is the beginning. We kind of have them. We say, well, what's the first crop? Okay, I'm going to get the first. No, we have to start with what's called the beginning. You don't begin with anything that's out there. You begin with the beginning. You start with something. Right? Now, keep that in mind. I want you to turn to John 16, John verse 6, chapter 6, John chapter 6. Verse 41. We'll start there. We're breaking into a thought here. I'm not going to go through the details. The Jews then complained about Him because He said, I am the bread which comes down from heaven. And they said, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it that he said, I come down from heaven? Now, why was that an issue?
Because one cannot be flesh and blood and be Elohim in their eyes.
Okay.
He was claiming to be equal with God Almighty.
Okay. Bereshit, para, Elohim, et Hashemayim, vaha'ayaz. Heaven came first. Heaven was the beginning of it. He came from the beginning. He came from above down to the earth. Wasn't the other way around. See, they knew that. Jesus therefore answered and said to him, do not murmur amongst yourself. No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up in the last day. Now, see now what's going on. He's going to resurrect them up, right? He's going to resurrect them up at the end. It is written in your prophets, and they shall be taught by God. A couple of direct teaching. Now, when is God going to come and teach us?
When He'll reign.
Sorry, what?
In His kingdom.
When He raises us up. Now we've got to be careful who is going to teach us. Who's going to teach us? Huh?
Moses?
Yahweh. All right, listen. John chapter 1. John chapter 1. Verse 1. Remember, in trying to understand and try to get this Greek word to agree with the Hebrew, what does your first sentence says? First statement say? In the beginning. Bereshit. 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 Was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now who's going to teach us? The Word's going to teach us. Because in the beginning, what?
He was with
who
God.
Was it? So that word Bereshit or Rashit really refers to whom?
The Word.
The Messiah. He's going to begin everything. So this is why he is in the beginning. You don't have any other evidence in the Torah other than the very first word. The very first word says Bereshit. Bereshit was there. The beginning was there. The guy who begun, the one who begins everything, was there. The very beginning. And here we have John who says, guess what? Nothing. All things were made. Well, be careful here with in Greek, they had the same word, okay, for the word create and the word make. Not so in Hebrew. We will get to that as we go on to chapter 1 in Genesis. Other things that God did from day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 6. It doesn't say the word create. Except in two locations. It says the word in Greek and Hebrew, formed, made, brought about, or called. We'll get to that later. Just listen to those differences. Very fascinating when you start thinking about this, because now we have all things were created through him. Without him, nothing was made. Nothing was formed. Nothing was established. Nothing was put into shape and configuration. And that's when we start with day one, day two, day three, day four, day five. We see things coming to shape, coming together. Animals came up from the earth. They were shaped from the earth. The trees were shaped from the earth. Man was shaped from the earth. The birds were shaped from the earth. The fish were shaped from the earth, not from above. Do you understand what I'm saying? You'll clear this in this first chapter. We'll figure out exactly where that comes into. So you'll see there's a distinct difference between the time he created to the time he called forth. Different words in Hebrew. So we can learn something about those 6 days of creation. 6 days of formation is a better term in Hebrew. We'll get to that when we get there. We'll get next week. We'll talk about the second word. So we see from the very beginning, Rashid was there. You never think it was a noun, right? You never think it was a person, right? You never think it was a being, right? But he says, I was there beginning. Now let's go to Proverbs, the 8th chapter. Proverbs, 8th chapter. We all know this one. The chapter is all about wisdom. Right? All about wisdom. Chapter 8. We're going to begin in verse 22. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 22. Because if I go keep, I'm going to keep on going here, not today, but I'm going to keep explaining to you more and more of a couple of parables, one major one, two of the major ones that Jesus used, and the word seed. Hebrew word, seed. All right? Verse 22. The Lord possessed me Bereshit of his ways. Before works of old, long before he started working of old, Bereshit or Rashit was there. What's another word for it? Wisdom. That means Jesus was a wise person, right? A lot of wisdom. He can consist of. Now remember we talked about the firstborn? Reuben? Now we're going to see the dignity, the power, the strength. All right? I was set from the everlasting or eternity from the beginning. Ever before there was a earth. You mean before Bereshit, Para, Elohim, Et Hashemayim, before that? Yeah, before that. He existed before he started creating. Do you understand what I'm saying? A lot of people have a hard time in the Christian world, basically, to picture that the Messiah actually did the creating. But that's what it says. In the beginning, I was there. Wisdom was there. Before there ever was an earth. When there was no depths, we won't go into that, but in the second verse, of Genesis 1, verse 2, talks about a word called depth. God created depth. We'll get to the Hebrew word later. But we understand here that even before the depth fell on this earth, before the deep darkness on the earth happened, lo and behold, he was there before it happened. And it says there, nothing happened without him. So now we have to ask yourself a question. Can God be two places at the same time?
Sure.
It's relatively easy for him. Piece of cake for him. Us, we can't do that. You know why? Because he's spirit. He could do a lot of things. Why? We'll get to the word Elohim later on. But it's talking about tremendous amount of flexibility and power and energy. It's not, quote, two gods in one. It's not, quote, three gods in one. It's the power which is greater than any of that. We don't limit God to a puny little two-being character. Our puny little three-being character, picture him as massive, powerful. Because that's what the word, we'll get to there, of Elohim, and why it even starts with Aleph. We won't get there yet. I just want to give the concept of Bereshit, the Bereshit, and we are going to be taught by, Jesus said, he will be taught by God. Who's going to do the teaching? I'd have to say it's going to be who teaches us today. Yeshua, or Yahweh, however you want to use his words. We're talking about the same being.
You say the same thing, but Yeshua, Yahweh?
Yep. Now, I use the term Father. I won't get into that one today because it's not a message yet for today about the Father or why he addresses and uses that term Father. We will get to that much later. I just want you to kind of keep in mind that we're looking at in the very first word, because you see, the very first word tells you the Messiah was there. He wasn't called the Messiah. He became a Messiah. He wasn't created as a Messiah. He became a Messiah. That's different. You understand what I'm saying? He couldn't have the title Messiah. It's just a title. It doesn't come about until the time comes for him to exercise or use that title. Right? Remember, he called himself the Son of Man. It's a title. It's a position. Now, if he's son of man, what does that mean?
He's born of marriage.
He came from above, right? And he came down, and he became a son of man. What's that mean? I mean, that's a really odd term, right? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it a testimony to the prophecy of the Word become flesh?
Partially, that's true. What book, what prophet talks about, constantly talks about Son of Man?
Daniel.
Daniel's very strong in the Son of Man. And so now we have identification of who the Son of Man is, because he going to become like man, and with man, he's going to begin with man. He's the beginning of manhood. You had that translation there of Reuben, the manhood, my manhood. Got an odd word to use, but nonetheless, we have the characteristic of God coming out in it. Now, God created man how?
In his image.
In his image. He didn't create a mistake. He created in his image. And became the son of man. He became the son of man of a sinner. Became the son of man of what he created in the first place. The first Adam. If he had not sinned, he would have had a son. The son would have said, son of man. Right? Logical. And Adam would have been not a savior, nothing to save. He'd just been the Rashid of creation, at the beginning of God's creation. Okay. Any thoughts? Any more ideas? Any more thinking? In John 6, chapter 63, verse 63, keep this part in mind. The words that I speak to you are spirit. The words I speak to you are life. But there are some of you who do not believe. When Jesus says he is alive, what does that mean? We got to get used to the word in Hebrew now. What did God breathe into the nostrils of Adam? What? Nephesh. So we take a look at that thing and we say, oh, I am what? The words I'm speaking to you are nephesh. Words of God are nephesh. It says that in the very beginning. Right? So in the very beginning, he tells you what the end is. The end is, I'm going to make man nephesh. I'm going to make man life. I'm going to make man spirit. I'm going to make man like unto me. When I'm going to create them in my image, or actually form them in my image, he forms them in his image, and then he breathes. And this is where the other Hebrew word comes in. When he breathes it into, the word changes from form to create. We'll get there next week. All right? There's no more questions. I know this has been a bit long, but I want to say it's kind of funny when you start looking at John 1:1, it says, Bereshit, if you actually wrote it in Hebrew, and chapter 1, verse 1 of Genesis is Bereshit, the same word. See, Greek can't use that word because it didn't work. It doesn't work on us in English either. We can't come up with a nice, wonderful word that describes the Word of the living God. The Word of the living God is Bereshit.